Welcome back to the Constitution, Line by Line. I'm Senator Mike Lee. Today, we're continuing our discussion of Article 1, Section 8, which deal with, among other things, Congress's power over the money system, as well as establishing a system of intellectual property protections. The text gives Congress the power, quote, to establish an uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States, to coin money, regulate the value thereof and of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures, to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and current coin of the United States, to establish post offices and post roads, to promote the progress of science and the useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries, to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court, to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of nations. We've already touched upon the reason for Clause 4. In replacing the Articles of Confederation, the framers wanted to ensure that inconsistent legal protections across state lines didn't serve as a barrier to commerce. So bankruptcy and naturalization are here unified under one federal umbrella. For this same reason, Clause 5 gives Congress the power to set standards of weights and measures. If, for example, an ounce of gold in Virginia weighed less than an ounce of gold in Maryland, trade between the states would become unnecessarily cumbersome and contentious. The ability to coin money and regulate the money supply was here granted to Congress in order to avoid the systems of competing currencies that became common under the Articles of Confederation. It was thought that a unified currency would make transactions easier. As part of its ability to regulate the currency, Congress is given the authority to punish counterfeiters. The coinage clause is written in such a way that it can be interpreted very broadly. Historically, the clause has allowed the federal government to fix exchange rates with foreign currencies, as well as the exchange rate between gold and silver. The clause allowed for the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank in 1913 and for legal tender laws requiring businesses to accept U.S. currency for all debts. However, these laws have faced significant challenges in the courts. Whereas the clause uses the word coin, referring to metal currency, the federal government began printing paper bills in 1861 to help finance the Civil War. These bills were then made legal tender, requiring the holders of debt to accept them in place of metal currency. In 1870, the Supreme Court struck down that requirement in a case called Hepburn versus Griswold. In that case, Chief Justice Salmon Chase argued that the law would deprive debt holders of their property in violation of the Due Process Clause. This decision was reversed the next year in Knox versus Lee, and paper money has been accepted as legal tender ever since then. This section gives Congress the power to establish a national post office to facilitate communication between the states and to define and punish crimes on the high seas where no individual state would have sufficient jurisdiction. One of the most interesting features of Article 1, Section 8 is found in Clause 8, which gives Congress the power to adopt laws protecting intellectual property rights. Our laws for patents and copyrights ultimately derive from this clause. But it should be noted here that trademarks are not specifically mentioned and have been justified by some under the Commerce Clause rather than the Copyright Clause. One could argue, on the other hand, that it's a better understanding of the Constitution to say that this naturally relates to and derives from the Intellectual Property Clause, and that this was a type of intellectual property and could be justified under that. The Copyright Clause is notable for for containing the only instance of the word rights in the main body of the Constitution, although that word appears, of course, in the Bill of Rights and subsequent amendments. As copyrights and patents have proved a great source of revenue for businesses over the years, it's not surprising that this clause has been hotly legislated, with the Supreme Court playing a major role in defining the exact limits on what that clause permits. On a number of occasions, Congress has voted to extend the terms of intellectual property rights. This is a practice that ultimately led to a constitutional challenge. In a case called Eldred versus Ashcroft in 2003, a group of librarians and publishers attempted to overturn the Copyright Extension Act of 1998, arguing that the Constitution specifies that intellectual property protection should be for a limited time, and arguing that repeated extensions rendered that language functionally meaningless. The Supreme Court rejected that challenge by a vote of 7-2, concluding that copyright extensions are in fact valid as long as they are for finite terms, terms that are decided by Congress and put into law. Thank you for joining me in this episode of The Constitution Line by Line. In the next episode, we'll continue our discussion of Article 1, Section 8 by looking at Congress's exclusive power to declare war. Don't forget to subscribe to this channel and click the bell for notifications. I look forward to seeing you again next time.